Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here we are. We're back at the spot. This is the place where the conversation is pointed. Yes, in your face. The guests are sharp, and there she is. And the responses are never, ever dull. Today, we have Christina Veslock. This is going to be very interesting, Brains, okay? If you are experiencing any sort of disease when it comes to addiction. Christina says that protein could be the fix. Now, I've never heard this perspective before, and she comes with a lot of credentials. She is a licensed psychotherapist and a certified nutrition. Her specialty is mental health nutrition. Now, I want to hear this. I want to blast this all over the place because if it's as simple as eating a couple boiled eggs, taking out other things, eating more chicken, eating more beans, lentils, then we need to get on board because everybody is 5150 at one point or another. We all have a tick. But if you are struggling with addiction, it's more of a disease. It's more of something that is internal and psychological. You know, so what we want to do is we really want to spearhead that. We want to get ahead of it. I'm so excited to have her here. Let's welcome her to the show. How are you, Christina Veslock? I love that.
I am great, April. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled, too, because we travel in the same circle of influence. We know some of the same people or, you know, same Facebook associates that are really into addiction. So I know that you know what you're talking about. So how did mental health, number one, become your passion and your place of you know, really wanting to pour into people and help them?
You know, April, it didn't start out that way. My whole entire life growing up, I was determined to become a medical doctor. I had that scientific brain. I was fascinated by how things worked. And that was my only goal in life. However, my whole life, I grew up ill. And my mother took me from doctor to doctor to try to figure out what was wrong. And all their tests said I was just fine. So they decided that I was just fine. And my mother was a hypochondriac. And meanwhile,
let me stop you right there because my niece, what is that called? Munchausen syndrome. Munchausen syndrome. Can you explain that? That is where they make you feel that you're sick or give. She did it to my nephew.
Mm-hmm. And that does happen where the parents are convinced something's wrong with their kid, but the kid is actually just fine. Wow. And it's just some kind of internal shame projection from the mother onto the child.
But they do that. They give them medication and they really, it's
damaging to the child. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it's hypochondriac pushed off on somebody else.
Yep, exactly. Wow. And that's what they decided my mother had. However, I actually really was sick. And I was getting sicker by the day. And by the time I finished college, April, I had the smarts to go to med school. I had the grades to go to med school. I didn't have the stamina to go to med school. And it broke my heart. It broke my heart because it was the only thing I ever had wanted to do. Was to learn how to heal people and was to learn how to think through the scientific, you know, the scientific research. And so I was lost for a while.
Wow. I know that was heartbreaking.
it was heartbreaking. And on top of it, you know, I also had my own depression and anxiety and trauma. What I didn't realize at the time was that some of my deep emotional pain and some of my anxiety and some of my fatigue was actually due to food intolerances and lack of specific nutrients. I didn't know any of that, and neither did my doctors. But I got, you know, I entered adulthood quite a mess.
Wow.
And I just determined that I was going to use my own pain to help other people somehow or another. I was going to make it happen. And then I realized, you know, I was doing some volunteer work in counseling and working on a hotline and with some women coming off the street in a transitional home. And I realized that I actually liked that and that maybe I was good at it. And so I went back to school and got my master's in marriage and family counseling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And going through school, I had decided that I wasn't going to do anything with addiction because addiction was scary. Now, I wasn't putting two and two together at that time. I had some stories in my past that sort of led me to believe that. Mm-hmm. But all I knew is I wasn't going to touch addiction with a 10-foot pole.
Mm.
However, God had a different idea.
Yes, he does.
Because I got out of
school. He is the author and the finisher. Yes, sir.
Something like that. You know, it's, what is it? Man proposes and God disposes. Well, I got out of school and I was looking for work. And there was this ad in the newspaper. This was in the time when you looked for work in newspapers. And this ad kept appearing and I kept ignoring it. It was for being a floor staff at a residential treatment program for court-ordered teenage alcoholic boys.
Oh, wow. That's a tough group right there.
Yeah, kind of like baptism by fire.
Wow.
And so this ad and I stared at each other for 4 months.
Wow.
And finally, I gave in and caught up and went in for an interview, and they loved me. And I said, I don't know anything about addiction. And they said, yes, but you have a heart and you have the skills and we'll teach you everything you need to learn.
Wow.
I was like, okay. And 2 years later, once I had the hours for my license, I knew a couple of things. I knew I loved the addiction world. I knew that there was addiction all through my family. And I knew that I didn't really want to work with court-ordered, conduct-disordered teenage boys.
That's not the population I wanted.
But I loved their families. And so I went on and I took a job running the family program in a hospital chemical dependency unit, and then started my own private practice, did a lot of work with adult children of alcoholics and addiction, with family members, and just, you know, really learning how to help people, not always successfully, you see.
Right.
And meanwhile,
because the recidivity, what is it? Recidivity?
The recidivism.
Recidivism. It doesn't lay on my tongue very well, but that brings it, basically what it means is people that fall into relapse and go back into incarceration, drug addicts,
yep.
Sometimes domestic violence. It's a cycle.
Yes, and so, there's a reason for this, and that reason I'll get to very shortly. Okay. But meanwhile, I'm still ill and I'm barely functional.
Mm.
I have chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia before those words were even coined.
Mm.
And I'm still sitting in deep, dark depression, even though I'm doing good for my clients, you know, sort of the wounded healer thing.
Right.
Well, and then I see this press release about this woman who started a nutritionally oriented treatment program. This was in the San Francisco Bay Area, using amino acids and interesting things and diet. And I was fascinated because I had discovered earlier that I was actually allergic to eggs, and eggs made me more depressed. And not eating eggs made me less depressed. And so I was already sort of interested, and my mom had really been into nutrition. And so my curiosity was piqued, April. And I drove across the, you know, Bay Bridge and into Mill Valley and, you know, the other side of San Francisco, and met this woman. And I was fascinated by what she and her nutritionist were talking about. But I was also so impressed by the nutritionist that I made an appointment with her to see if she could figure out what was wrong with me. Okay, I'm now 30.
Okay.
And she tried a few things and nothing changed. And then one day, maybe our third or fourth session, she looked at me and she said, you know, you don't have all the symptoms, i.e. you're not skin and bones, because I put on weight at 8 and still haven't lost it. And she said, but I want you to go off gluten for 5 days, just 5 days. Well, you know, this is the early 90s and nobody had ever heard of gluten.
Right.
Right. But it was like, okay. So I went off gluten, and day 5, I woke up and my life had turned right side up. I felt alive for the very first time in my whole entire life.
Wow.
Whole entire life.
So let's, because I want to pump the brakes for people that hear these big $25 terms. I want you to be clear, because it's like, to me, sometimes these marketing things, and we'll talk about nutrition a little bit more, but sugar-free, fat-free, gluten-free, you know, a lot of times, in my opinion, that's also a marketing strategy.
It sure is.
So tell people really what is gluten and what type of foods gluten is in.
Okay, so gluten is a protein found in wheat, rye, barley. So things we make all of our flours out of and all of our baked good out of. And commercial oats, because oats are actually contaminated in the field and in the factory.
Girl, we're not going to talk about Monsanto, but anyway.
Well, that's true.
That's another show.
That complicates things tremendously. But So gluten containing foods, and 30 years ago, you know, now when you go to the supermarket, gluten free is all over the place.
Is it really though?
Because really
you've got, well, you've got genetically
modified. And it's yummy.
It is. But see, another thing about gluten, isn't it like a filler or a binder that expands the rice expands the flour? What is it that it binds to and it's
stretchy? It's what makes it stretchy. It's what holds things together, holds cakes together, holds breads together, allows bread to rise. Mm. Okay, that's what gluten does. It's sort of a stretchy, elastic thing.
Now, it is primarily in, you know, like baked goods. Is it in pastas?
Wheat. Anything that's made out of wheat. So April, here's a funny story. It's sort of a sad story too, but way back when I first started figuring this out, I would like go out to breakfast with my husband and they'd say, you know, do you want toast? And I'd say, no, I'm allergic to wheat. And they'd say, oh, that's okay. We'll bring you white bread.
Okay.
Okay.
But the flour is made from the wheat.
It's the flour, whether it's white flour or whole wheat flour, it's all still coming out of wheat that you grow in the ground.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And so I, you know, my life turned around by day 5. It was the most astonishing thing I'd ever experienced in my life. So I called up my mother, and there's a technical name for part of this disorder, and it's called celiac disease.
I've heard of celiac disease.
Yep. Well, I call my mother and say, my therapist, my nutritionist, thinks I might have celiac disease. And there's dead silence. Dead. I say, Mom. And she says, you were diagnosed with that when you were 2 years old. Mm-hmm. But they didn't tell me about gluten. because they didn't know about the gluten connection when I was 2 years old. And so I grew up ill. And then in those days, they thought that you had to be skin and bones to have celiac disease. Oh, yeah. And I wasn't. And that's how the diagnosis got completely lost, April. Lost. So here I am now, missed my chance to go to med school, but now I'm a psychotherapist, loving it, good at it. And now I'm discovering that, you know, at what you eat or don't eat actually matters to your mental health and your emotional well-being. And I was so impressed by the nutritionist I went to and all the things I was learning, and I started taking different amino acids and fish oil and other things that just kept on making me feel better and better and better. And I went and got the same training and other training and started getting training in functional medicine and put it all together. And I didn't realize that I had become an expert, but somewhere along the way, people started treating me like I was. And it was like, oh, well, maybe I know something.
So let's fast forward it a little bit to actually the correlation between addiction and protein. How do they work together?
Okay. So here's what I learned is that what we eat matters to our emotional well-being for a couple of very specific reasons. And the first reason is that we have these brain chemicals. They're called neurotransmitters, and they run our mood and our behavior and our energy and our ability to sleep. Okay. If they're in balance, we're in balance. If we have enough of them, then our emotions and our reactions are accurate to our environment. We're sad when sad things happen. We're angry when bad things happen, okay? But we're able to relax. We're happy when happy things happen, where they're accurate. We're able to relax and sleep. We're able to wake up in the morning, but only when these neurotransmitters are well fed and in balance. So here's my motto. My motto is that it's our brain's job to allow us to cope with stress gracefully. Isn't that nice?
Well, it is, but it can be, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the right word.
But April, only if our brains are fed optimally.
Right.
We have to feed our brains what they need in order to function optimally for us to be able to cope with stress, for us to be able to feel good and do all the things we want to do in our life. But you see, in our society, we're not taught why we should eat, right? We eat because it tastes good. We eat because it's fun. We eat because we're hungry.
No, that's what one of my guests said to me. She said, "Are you eating for entertainment?" and I didn't think about it. And I was like, "Well, yeah."
And we do, right? We eat for social reasons. Mm-hmm. Most of us do not eat with the idea of feeding our brains and our bodies what it needs to function at our best, what we need to function at our best. We don't think about that when we make our food choices, but right. We should be.
Well, I mean, you know, most people live to eat instead of eat to live.
Bingo.
And okay, so let's clear the slate. Let's think about, again, brains, what we are putting in our mouth. Because what you have to understand is that we are what we eat.
Yep. And our brains are what we eat.
Right. And what we also are is what we eliminate or we don't eliminate. Leaky gut health is on everybody's tongue right now. Because, again, if you got a leaky gut, it's going to cause inflammation and just one thing after another. So you're in this space with people that have addiction. How did your light bulb go off to say, hey, this protein thing is really going to help people get, you know, to adjust?
Yeah. Because when protein is made out of little molecules called amino acids, and when we eat our protein and digest it and absorb it, so no leaky gut, When we absorb it appropriately, they go everywhere in their body and they make our muscles and our skin and our blood and our enzymes. Some of them get into the brain, and especially if they carry vitamins and minerals with them. So in the presence of vitamins and minerals, these amino acids make our brain chemicals. They make our neurotransmitters. And then if we have the right type of fats in our diet, the neurotransmitters are transmitted appropriately, and we get all of the good feelings and good actions and good everythings we want. However, if we don't have enough amino acids or enough vitamins and minerals or enough of the right fats, we cannot make our neurotransmitters, and then we have symptoms. Well, what some people do with their symptoms, they feel so nasty that they drink a glass of wine and it says, oh, I like that. Right? Or they get an oxy and all of a sudden, for the first time, maybe they can focus or they can relax or their pain goes away. Or. So these mood altering substances fire these brain chemicals and deplete them. But they fire them, and so we get to feel better for a little while. Well, who doesn't want more feeling better, right? We all do. But the problem is that the more we use these substances, the less brain chemicals we have. They eat them up in great big gobs. So we have less and less and less. That's tolerance. So you stop using, and now what? You feel like crap. You're more anxious. You're more depressed. You're more angry. You're more tired. You're more craving.
Okay, let me interject right here. The marijuana craze. Everybody thinks, you know, weed used to be cool. Okay. Weed used to be sexy. It would make you happy. It would make you horny. It would make you hungry. Now it does everything from reduce hot flashes to stop people from having epilepsy seizures to sleep disorders. Because it too, brains, is genetically modified. Don't get it twisted. Okay, I've been in dispensaries. I'm not trying to pretend like I haven't lived, okay? But I will tell you that when you go in there and you've got a treasure trove of different strains, marijuana, the THC was only 3%. You go in there now, it's 33%. Where'd that come from? How can you trust supposedly an organic plant that has no seeds, no stems, not a one. Ain't that good a clipper in the world? It is about supply and demand. They're putting pesticides on it. They're putting steroids on it. They're growing it indoors because it is supply and demand. So if you are thinking that this is just, you know, the marijuana thing is all cool, you got to twist it. It's not what it used to be. What's your opinion, Christina?
It's certainly not what it used to be. This is why more and more people are going psychotic.
That's right.
Using marijuana. But again, we use it like we use alcohol or we use sugar or we use nicotine because it can fire whatever neurotransmitter needs firing and makes us feel temporarily better. So we have to ask ourselves, April, why are we all feeling so crappy that we need something to feel better? Well, the answer is because we're not getting what we need from our food. Either we're not getting the nutrients because they're not in our food anymore, or we're just making poor choices because nobody's told us that it matters to our mental health, to our emotional well-being, or to our addiction recovery. Because you see, when we stop using, our neurotransmitters are so depleted that we feel even worse. What makes our neurotransmitters happy? Protein. The amino acids from protein directly make our neurotransmitters. So if we're not eating enough protein, we cannot make our neurotransmitters. Our brains cannot recover from addiction. And so we'll continue to have symptoms. We'll continue to be depressed. We'll be anxious. We'll have insomnia. We'll be irritable. We'll have ADHD, on and on and on and on. And what do the doctors do? They want to give us more medication to tweak the brain, not fix it, not feed it, not identify the underlying driver, but just sort of shift some things around. So now we're addicted and dependent on more medication, just different ones.
Now, I say this with all due respect because you've done the homework. But are there case studies? Are there other doctors that are looking into this? You know, I know that you
Since
are a trailblazer.
1950s.
Wow.
Okay, this is not new information, April. It just hasn't made it to the mainstream. I'm not quite sure why. Because all
because you
have you to
know
do
why?
Actually
you know why, Christina? Why? Because well people aren't big business. Sick people are big business. Addiction is big business. The it's beds in the hospital is big business. Street corners is big business.
And medication for mood disorders is big business. Not eating protein every 4 hours to give your brain what it needs to function and stabilize blood sugar. So you see, there's something else that eating protein every 4 hours does for you. First of all, gives your brain the amino acids it needs to make more neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. But secondly, it keeps your blood sugar absolutely stable. Well, reactive hypoglycemia is something that a lot of conventional doctors sort of roll their eyes at because they've not actually looked at the blood studies. Okay, they haven't looked. But the reality is that if you give somebody recovering from a substance use disorder a 5-hour glucose tolerance test, they're diagnosable with reactive hypoglycemia. What does that mean? That means if you eat sugar, your blood sugar goes up really fast. It drops really low, really fast.
Mm.
Well, if blood sugar drops really low, either because you ate too much sugar, and most of us do, or because you've just skipped one or two or three meals because nobody's told you that it matters, what happens? Adrenaline kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever blood sugar drops too low or too fast, we get an adrenaline spurt or two or three or 10.
All right. So let me pump your brakes right here because I'm paying close attention to this. I'm going to listen to this 3 or 4 times. But now the big thing is intermittent fasting. And wait, I'm going to get your perspective, but let me ask my question because you're ready to lock and load on me. I can see it. Okay. So I'm doing that right now. Okay. I am giving my body, I figure if I'm up 12 hours and I'm stuffing it with food, I can give it 12 hours with no food. Let the body rest, let the blood sugar stabilize, let the body renew itself. I get all that. But how is that in conjunction with what you're talking about? It's not a contradiction, but how do you make them work cohesively and in harmony? Because, you know, people are diabetics.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times to lose weight, they say have smaller meals more regularly so mm-hmm. that you don't have the spikes. So where are we at? I'm confused.
Okay. So 12 hours, you eat your last food intake is 8 o'clock at night, and then you eat breakfast 8 o'clock in the morning. That's fine. Most people have no problem going from 8 to 8 with no food. You're sleeping in there. It allows your brain to and your body to clear out the debris, to do its housekeeping. No problem. It's the 16 hours where people get into trouble. It's stop eating at 8 and don't eat again until noon.
Right, because they, you know, I hear people and they tell you all the time, oh, well, I've done it for 16 hours. Well, good for you. I'm not doing the 16 hours. I'm lightheaded. I'm dizzy. I'm cranky. I'm evil.
Yes. And guess why you're lightheaded, dizzy, cranky, and evil?
Depleted my neurotransmitters.
That and the adrenaline's kicked in.
Mm.
Okay. It's the adrenaline that makes you dizzy, that makes you irritable, that makes you mean, that makes your brain just go all over the place. Adrenaline. And so adrenaline, April, is our culprit. Because under the influence of adrenaline, some really bad things happen in the brain.
Wow.
Okay, first of all, we lose willpower. And they've done studies that show when blood sugar drops, we lose willpower. So if you've missed a meal or two or three, you lose the ability to say no.
Right. And then what happens is you overcompensate, you gorge.
Then you gorge, exactly. So you lose the ability to say no. You also lose access to your recovery skills. So I've worked with, I used to specialize in working with people with chronic relapse, people who were going to 2-3 AA meetings a day for years, people who'd gone through 5 or 6 treatment programs, and they were serious and they were committed, and they still couldn't utilize the skills they were learning in treatment and through their meetings. That's, and you know, they, their cravings would come out of the blue. By the way, no cravings ever come out of the blue, but it feels like it. Their cravings would come out of the blue. They'd find themselves calling their dealer, or, you know, grabbing the donuts or the candy, or, you know, stopping in the liquor store. And their sponsor or their therapist would say, well, why didn't you use all of these skills that we've been practicing?
Right.
It didn't occur to me. I forgot. Well, why did they forget? Then you ask, and here's a question I want everybody, especially every treatment professional, asking. When was the last time you ate protein prior to your craving, prior to your slip, prior to your violent episode, prior to your panic attack? When was the last time you ate protein? I've been asking that question for 25 years. And the answer is really consistent. People look at me blankly and say, yesterday?
Okay, but people, let's go into the nutrition slice of this.
Okay.
Give us some proteins. Give us some proteins. Eggs. Because eggs. That's another big $25 word that's tossed around all the time.
Eggs.
You know, and okay, eggs. All right, but look at you. You were addicted. You were allergic to eggs.
I was allergic to eggs. So I don't have eggs for breakfast. I have sardines on gluten-free crispy bread.
Ooh, with Lord, you better than me. You better than me. I can't do a sardine. Okay.
I know, but
a lot of people like them. But
I
that's
grew up with them.
That's a lot of... My mother did too. I don't even like looking at the little things. The only time I like looking at them is if we're going fishing, and I don't like to go fishing too much either. Okay.
Andouille sausage, April. You were telling me about your red beans and andouille sausage.
I'm telling you, I cooked that today. I sure did, and it is delicious. But let me tell you something. I cooked that, okay, and when I first started to cook, I said, I'm going to have andouille sausage, and I'm going to make red beans, rice, and cornbread. This is what I said to myself. Then I looked in the refrigerator, and there was no milk. So I said, okay, you don't need the bread, April. You don't need that starch. You don't need that gluten. Pull it away. Okay. Then I said, you know what? My husband's, you know, originally from New Orleans, so he loves the red beans. You just can't have it without rice. But I said, I'm not going to have it with rice. Christine, I went in there, I made that andouille sausage with some peppers and some onions and put just a little bit of brown sugar on it, put it in the oven and made them red beans and rice. I done had 3 helpings and I feel good and I feel lightheaded because I got a lot of protein.
Yes.
I got a lot of, those beans really did it. So beans, lentils, what other kind of proteins can we have?
Okay, well, so all your meats, right? Your chicken, your beef, your pork, all your meats, all your fishes, your shrimp, even, you know, the Greeks really love octopus. Okay.
Calamari, mine got to be cooked. Okay. So I get that. Okay. What about people that are, you know, vegan, vegetarian? See, there's a lot of people that don't like that. And I've heard, I don't know, brains, I'm just asking the question. Don't be looking at me all sideways. But they say that there is a deficiency because they're not getting the protein that they need in the amount that they need. So they
can
take supplements, right? You can take supplements.
You drink protein drinks. You add the right amino acids. There's not a whole lot of the amino acid tyrosine in your, you know, beans and your lentils. But you can buy tyrosine over the counter, and it's what your brain makes dopamine out of. It gives you alertness and brightness and, you know, the sense of well-being and life.
So you would take that just like you take your vitamin C and zinc and all the rest of that stuff.
Exactly. And we've got four neurotransmitter systems in our brain. Three of them are made out of just one.
So, Christine, I want to ask you about amino acids. What are the benefits?
They turn into neurotransmitters within 20 minutes, April. They can turn off a panic attack. They can turn off a craving, say a craving for cocaine or meth. I can turn that off within 20 minutes by using the amino acid L-tyrosine.
Now, is that something, is that a prescription or is that something you get over the counter? What is that?
You can buy it from any vitamin store, from GNC, from Amazon. Really easy peasy. And it's safe because it's anti-addictive.
Wow. Also, what do you think about supplements in a liquid form versus the capsules? Because a lot of times, you know, it varies from manufacturer to manufacturer, just like anything else.
Just get a good company.
But they're saying, you know, a good company, something, someone that you can research online. And then the liquid droplets work a lot quicker in the bloodstream. You can put a couple drops or whatever up under your tongue, right?
You sure can. Or the chewables. Or we just open the capsule of the powder, dump it in water, swish it around, stick it in your mouth, swish it in your mouth for a little bit before you swallow it, go straight to your brain, making those neurotransmitters within 2 minutes.
Now, how does this work as far as like weight loss? Does it, it helps with the craving of the addiction of eating?
Sugar and crap, yes. Because we crave sugar and our carbs for different reasons, because sugar will fire whatever neurotransmitter is depleted. So sugar will give you energy. So when I'm really tired, I crave sugar. I don't eat sugar. I haven't eaten sugar since I was a teenager. But if I'm really
wait. Let me pump the brakes on there, because everything has salt or sugar.
Okay. So when I say no sugar, I'll have a little bit of sugar here. I'll have a little bit of sugar there. But because I have to be gluten-free and I have to be corn-free, I actually eat really clean. So I pretty much make everything I eat. Okay. So that makes it a whole lot easier. So yeah, I will give myself a treat here and there, but I'll have a spoon of ice cream. My husband will have the whole bowl of ice cream, and he looks at me like I'm bonkers.
Right.
But it's like, if I eat more than the spoon, I feel sick. I get a hangover the next day. Sugar is so not my friend, but if I'm tired, I'll crave it. Right. Other people crave sugar to, you know, give them the warm fuzzies if they broke up with their boyfriend and they're crying.
Right. Let me eat that whole, you know, Rocky Road, that whole pint of Rocky Road is going to make me feel better. Right. Okay.
That's right. Well, that's where we use the amino acid D-phenylalanine, because that supports your endorphin production in the brain. We also use D-phenylalanine if you're coming off heroin, by the way. But it works to relieve pain, to relieve emotional pain, to give you comfort, to take the edge off loneliness or grief. And again, it's anti-addictive.
And it's over-the-counter, brains.
And it's over-the-counter. Amino acid each. So tyrosine makes your dopamine and norepinephrine. Tryptophan and 5-HTP make your serotonin. GABA makes your GABA, so does theanine, or at least supports GABA. The endorphins are made out of a whole bunch of different amino acids. Now, the endorphins are what relieve pain, give us numbness, help bring us a sense of comfort. They're the warm fuzzies, okay? But it's the endorphins that are depleted by opiates and opioids. They fire the endorphins, and then they deplete them.
Wow.
And, but many, many people who have opioid use disorder don't eat, they eat sugar, but they don't eat protein. So they're not getting the stuff they need to rebuild their endorphins. So they keep using, or they stop using. Now they have cravings because they have a starving brain and depleted endorphins. And no way to rebuild them because they're not eating the right food. This is where eating protein saves lives.
All right. So check this out. So now you have the individual that is going through recovery. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this many times. I've seen people in recovery. I've worked in recovery houses with people. I've, you know, all this stuff. But they go from one addiction to the next. You may be off the, you know, yeah, you may be off the heroin, but now you on the, you know, you're at the place and you're on coffee and cigarettes.
Yep. And sugar.
And sugar.
Don't forget the sugar.
Right. So and when I was in China, Christina, they would call sugar the white poison, sweet poison. That's what they call it, sweet poison. And now when I look at sugar, I've done really well. I used to, again, I would have coffee with my sugar and cream. Okay. Now I look at it and I can drink my tea with no additional sugar, which was a challenge. I backed away from that thing called soda.
Yep.
Which was, you know, I was a person that would get a refill. And now if I'm thirsty, I get water. Water is the best. I put a lot of ice if I get a carbonated beverage or soda, because I still like it. I'm not going to deprive myself. Mm-hmm. I am really watching that sweet poison, and I'm going to really pay attention because I noticed that. I noticed the bread. See, bread is my kryptonite, mm-hmm. and it's the gluten in there. Yes. And I was looking at my belly, and it looked like somebody had stuck an air hose up my ass. I was like, what in the... I said, what is all this? What is, I couldn't wait to eliminate. And then you're gassy. And then when you use the bathroom, you know, folks got to leave the house because you're stinking. So I said, let me just kind of pull back on this bread kind of thing.
Yeah.
I said, well, let me change from, you know, one type of bread to another, maybe to a sourdough or something like that. It's in all breads. And when I don't eat it, like today, I was so proud of myself because we don't eat beans without some cornbread. That is a staple in the Black community. That just goes together. You got to sop up that pot liquor with a roll of bread, some cornbread. But I am really full, and I'm so happy that I didn't make the cornbread.
Yeah, and you have a really clear brain.
I
have
clear. I feel good. I'm full.
And your gut's better.
My gut's better. Now, with the protein brains, when you cook beans, put just a little pinch of baking soda to get that gas off. Because if you don't, you'll be playing a tune next all afternoon long. So you say every 5 hours.
4 to 5 hours. And if
4 to 5 hours.
If you're premenstrual, right, and you got PMS, mm-hmm. you need to eat every 3 hours.
Okay.
That will really help the PMS go away. And you can take some 5-HTP. Serotonin drops premenstrually as well. What a lot of folks don't realize, April, is that PMS for women mm-hmm. is the highest risk time for relapse.
Really?
Most women, when we relapse, or actually when we're arrested, is premenstrually.
Wow. So what's happening menopausally? Because I know that when I was going, I was having some hot flashes, girl, they was personal summers. They was beyond that. What I started to do was keep a food journal. Uh-huh. Right? You better be taking notes because this is heavy duty. This can save your life. Okay.
And a whole lot of money. Life.
Absolutely. So I would keep a food journal and I would write down what time I had a hot flash, what I had eaten, and how long it was before my body reacted from what I ate. And that's when I got rid of the sugars. That's when I got rid of the soda. That's when I got rid of, you know, other sugars. My breast was really tender from having caffeine. Mm-hmm. All of that was just, it was a recipe for disaster. And when I got that under control, it diminished considerably.
That's right. And again, what we eat matters to our well-being, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whether it be PMS or menopause. Menopause is also a time in a woman's life where she's at highest risk, where we are at highest risk for mental health issues and addictive disorders getting out of control.
Well, what about the menopause? You know, men are going through the change of life too. Is that what makes them run out and get a young blonde and a sports car? All you gotta do is give them some protein.
Well, so I mean, this is where you want other things. So I found 80% of the time, changing somebody's diet and giving them amino acids and other nutrients does the trick. Miraculously, very quickly, like within days or weeks.
No,
but 20% of the time, it doesn't work.
Okay, within days or weeks, they will feel a difference. The cravings will really.
April, I can turn off a craving within 20 minutes.
Wow.
I can turn off a craving within 20 minutes. Because I know most of the time what biochemically is causing that craving. Wow. See, it's not the stressor. We're all taught that it's the stressor that causes the craving, that it's the trigger.
Right.
And we look for the trigger. Well, it's not the trigger, because sometimes you can be triggered. You can have exactly the same trigger and sail through with no cravings and no problem whatsoever. Mm. And at other times, exactly the same trigger will bowl you over. So what's the difference? The difference is the time that you have no problem at all is when you have a well-fed brain. You have access to your recovery skills, your brain's online because there's no adrenaline, and you're good to go. It's when you've missed a couple of meals and your adrenaline's running, you've lost willpower and you've lost access to your recovery skills, because that's what adrenaline does. Then you get exactly the same stressor, exactly the same trigger, and now you're bowled over. Now you can't access your recovery skills. And that little addicted part of your brain says, I know what to do. And you find yourself calling your dealer or stopping at the liquor store or.
Wow.
Every single time.
This is so fascinating. I'm so glad that there's people on the planet like you. And I say that, to whom much is given, much is required, because you suffered, you went through it. So Brain, she's not talking at you. She's talking with you. She's, yep. You know, she's been there and she's seen it and she's worked in the field. You are absolutely amazing, Christina. I have to go back and listen to this like 4 or 5 times. I'm glad I got the master. Have you written a book?
I have not written a book. I do, however, have courses and classes and YouTube videos.
Okay. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, please.
Okay. The name of my school is the Academy for Addiction and Mental Health Nutrition. And that's the YouTube channel. But I want everybody to go to My Baby. Okay. My Baby, which is my brand new nonprofit, eatingproteinsaveslives.org.
Eating protein
saves lives.
Saves lives.
.org.
Okay.
And everything I've been talking about, that information is on that website. And then if you donate as little as $2, you get access to our resource library, lots of information on how to incorporate protein into your diet, recipes, all sorts of good things.
And we can't do nothing with $2. Don't you donate anything less than $40 or $50. Because you know what? You are going to spend that on something that's not protein. Okay, you're going to spend that on some sugar. You're going to spend it on some fast food. You're going to spend it on some bread. You're going to spend it on some alcohol or some drugs or some bunk weed, you know. So why not make the investment in helping save other people's lives? And if it is this clear cut.
It is. And it is this clear cut.
And if it is this simplistic, you've tried everything else. I suggest you try this. Yep. You let me know if one of my brains give you $2. I'm going to get them.
April, my goal, because this message is so important and it's so unknown, that I want to shout it from the rooftops. Mm. And the best way to shout things from the rooftops in today's world, other than Facebook, is billboards. So I'm raising the money to put up billboards around the country, starting in the county where I now live right now, which has the highest opioid overdose rates in the entire country. Somehow I landed here. And I want to put up a billboard in downtown Wayne, West Virginia, letting people know that.
How much does it cost for the billboard?
$6,000.
Okay, Brains, I got a call out. I've got doctors, I've got lawyers, I've got teachers, I got preachers, and I even got some drug dealers. Okay, that want to do good. They want to get out this life. So what I want you to do is I want you to make an offering, a love offering. Okay, for everybody on this planet has somebody that's addicted. Mm-hmm. Everybody, and just like they have somebody in jail. Please, 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 I'm making a call to action. No less than $50. You can't do nothing with $2. That's an insult. That's not even worth her time. $50, $6,000 is chump change.
I know.
I'm putting a call out to some people that I know that got big money. Maybe they'll write you the whole check for $6,000.
I would love it, because I want billboards plastered across this country. Because April, we have known this information since the 50s.
So what's going to be on the billboard? I know that you don't have it. It's going to be your telephone number, how to get in contact with you, how to get in contact with the program. Okay.
Yep. All and right. It's going to be, you know, eating protein every 4 hours to help reduce cravings and relapse.
All right.
And then
I'm going to do is I'm going to be sure to put that at the back part of the another call to action. At the back part of this, because I want you to heal brains. That's why I do this. I don't do it because I get to wear a cute little hat. I do it because I love you, truly. And when I came across Christina, and you know, it was just amazing. I was like, I don't see how this is going to work. I just don't understand it. And I clearly understand it now. And whether you are addicted to drugs or food, or you got a little tick, and yep. You know, mental health. People are afraid, Christina, of people with mental health because they can't see it. I know. It's not an open wound. You don't know when a person's going to go from a flicker to a flame. You don't understand if it's a drug induced, if they're self-medicated. We don't know how to handle mental health. And everyone wants us to be so sensitive to people with mental health challenges. But it's like the homeless population. Right. I was talking to my husband. There's a young kid that lives down the street from us. And I've known him since he was, you know, 12 years old. And he's on the street and he is looking bad. And I was, you know, I told my husband, I said, I every time I see him, I give him some money because I don't want him, you know, out there like that. But his hair is matted. And his clothes are so bad. And I told him, I said, why don't you just go get a haircut? And my husband was telling me, he said, baby, you know, you can't just go in there and just cut his hair like that. You put him in shock. Mm-hmm. He said, you could really traumatize. Just throw him in somewhere and just give him a shower. It has to be a gradual process. And so if you can start this process by ingesting the food and changing your diet, in conjunction with the other tools, the 12 steps and a counselor, all this is a bridge to support you. Then, you know what? I want to get this meth and stuff off the street. It is just absolutely crazy. And that's a part of the distraction brains. They want to keep us confused. So the way that they can keep us confused is if they keep us twisted up.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I'm doing right now is there is a rescue mission in the town near where I live, Huntington, West Virginia, and they feed like 20,000 people a month. But they're not teaching anybody how to cook. Right? So what's the difference between giving somebody a fish for a day or teaching them how to fish?
Right. Growing a garden.
So we are going to be teaching people how to cook. Because one of the things with generational poverty is that generations have lost the skill of knowing what to do in their kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, fast food, eating crap, because you don't know, it scares you to walk into your kitchen. You don't know what to do. You don't know what to eat. You don't know what to buy.
Well, they've taken home economics economics is not even a part of the academic curriculum anymore. I used to love that.
It's so sad. So many people now don't know what to do in the kitchen anymore. That needs to come back. Teaching kids how to cook needs to come back. Well, we're going to be teaching the street people and the people in recovery living at the rescue mission how to cook. Okay. So that they can teach their children how to cook, and it's no longer scary.
So I'm looking at a food, and this is my last question for you. I had another nutritionist that was on my show. She's brilliant as well, but she says you eat your protein with your starch, mm-hmm. or you eat your protein with your veggies, but you don't do the starch, protein, and veggies because the enzymes, it takes harder, it's longer to break down the food. It varies from person to person. Okay, but what you're saying is people are loading up on these carbohydrates just like they're, you know, on the protein. You'll look at their plate and they got this much pasta, that much meat, and no greens.
Right, exactly.
What should our plate look like?
You know, some people do have digestive issues and need to be more careful. The rest of us can manage it. This is going to sound strange. I think half the plate should be protein. And, or maybe a third of the plate should be protein. A third of it should be veggies. And a little bit of it should be the starch. Okay. You know, you've got some fruit in there. Okay. Typically, we should be eating a minimum of women, 40 to 60 grams of protein a day, no less than that. I know a lot of people who look at that and say, oh my God, you need to eat a lot more. And I know other people who say, that's so much food.
Well, like you said, it doesn't necessarily have to be food. It can be supplemented with supplements.
It can be supplemented. You can take protein drinks, all sorts of things. But so 3 eggs is 21 grams. Okay, half a cup of cottage cheese is 20 grams. Piece of meat or fish the size of a big palm is 20 grams. Okay, you can do it. But women, no less than 40 to 60 grams. Men, no less than 60 to 80 grams. Most of us need a lot more. The FDA says we should be eating 6 to 9 servings of fruits and veggies a day. Mm-hmm. 9. I don't eat 9. That's where I use a multivitamin.
I've read some nutrition books and I'm continuously looking at them, but I eat some fruit before I eat my meal. And that does something to really kind of get my digestive juices flowing. Grace, I tell people all the time, you got to watch your elimination process. You got to look back in there and see what's floating around. Colon cancer is on the rise. Breast cancer, you know, leaky gut. There's a lot of things that are happening mm-hmm. by not paying attention. You know, your bowels are bleeding, your constipation, diarrhea. You're on one side of the spectrum or the other. I was drinking agave. Mm-hmm. I thought agave was much better for me. That agave was worse than sugar on me. I don't know how it is on other people, but it was not my friend.
No, it's not. It's not my friend either. So April, in my advanced class, I teach my psychotherapy client students, right? They're psychotherapists, they're addiction counselors. I teach them to ask their clients about their poop because it's important. It matters.
Mm-hmm. Because that has went through your entire digestive system.
Yep.
From your tongue down through your bloodstream, through your urine, through your kidneys. I mean, what you eat, it goes through your entire body, brains. Think about that. You know, this is just the vessel. You got to work with the internal GPS system. Well, Christina, you are amazing. I hope that you come back and share more information with me and my brains here on the edge. Brains, we're going to put her nonprofit. We're going to put her call to action. Okay. And we are going to continue to follow her. Pay attention. Do a little experiment and report back. Mm-hmm. Be sure to leave a comment because if it doesn't work for you, we want to know why. We want to see if you followed the instructions because, you know, everybody, you know,
1 week.
Try it for 1 week. That's 7 days, not 5 in a piece. That's 7 days. Try it. 7 days of your life. If you are going through an addiction, or I'm going to even try it. I'm going to mark it as of today, and I'm going to try to eliminate the starches and the gluten and all that, try to build more protein, and I'm going to report back. So I'm not going to just ask you to do something that I wouldn't do for myself. It can't hurt you. You're going to eat the chicken anyway.
20 so grams of protein every 4 hours and see what happens. April, I used to run a domestic violence agency. Okay. And I did the women's part and my colleague did the men's, but I would sub for these guys. Okay. Every once in a while. And I would give them this lecture and I would talk to them about how, when they skip a meal or eat Captain Crunch and Mountain Dew for breakfast, right. The adrenaline spikes and it's the adrenaline that causes the violence. Mm-hmm. And so I gave them this challenge for 1 week, get rid of the Mountain Dew and the Captain Crunch. Eat 20 grams of protein every 4 hours and report back to the group next week what you notice. And April, these big burly men, tats, covered in tats, right? Mm-hmm. Ex-cons would stop me in the hallway with tears saying, why didn't anybody ever tell me this before?
Wow.
They said my entire life changed. I was no longer angry. I could deal with my wife. I could deal with my kids. I didn't scream. I didn't feel violent the entire week. My life changed.
Because it seems like, just from observation, that when you use these substances, it draws you to the sugars and the sweetness. I mean, again, like I said, you know, when you smoke a joint, first thing you want is, you know, you want a cupcake. You know, you want a cupcake. You want to go get a few tacos. It really sets you off.
It does.
And it enhances and it just takes you right where I know that you don't want to be, Brains. I know you don't want to be addicted. I know you don't want to be chasing a dope man. I know that you don't want to be selling your body. I know that you don't want to be in pain. I know that you don't want to be angry. I know this, and you know it too. And if you can start by watching what you eat, and again, like I said, these other pillars that can help you climb to success, you got a cheerleader right here. You got two right here. We are team you. We are team you, and we know that you can do it. You are the best. Christina, you are the best. Thank you so much. Please come back and visit us again. This has just been overwhelming.
I would love to. Thank you, April. All and right. Thank you, all of you out there.
You got to call them Brains.
More power to you.
Because we're feeding brains. Our brains. That's right.
Brains. That's right. Right.
We are feeding our brains. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Brains, I need you to go handle your business, okay? Love, like, and share, and donate. Yes. Okay, I don't have a problem making an ask. I've worked for some of the biggest nonprofits. I know how to make the money, okay? She might have a t-shirt for you. She might have a bookmark. She might have whatever it is, but I need you to support her in this effort to save lives there in Wisconsin. You're in Wisconsin, right?
West Virginia.
The opiate capital of the world. We don't need the government. That's right. Feeding recovery. You see that? All right. Thank you so much. I will talk to you again soon. Bye.